Hi, ladies and gentlemen. How are you tonight? Very good. I'm so happy to meet some of you before the concert. It's always really nice for me to see some faces. I actually have enough lighting that I can see you, which is not always the case when you're up here in the spotlight. And it's a chance to talk a little bit about the concert and spend some time together. So my name is Tanya Miller. I'm very, very happy to be here guest conducting your Rockford Symphony Orchestra. It's been a wonderful week. We've had 4 rehearsals together. Today was our last rehearsal together as we put everything together in excitement for tonight. And this orchestra is full of great musicians. I know that you are proud of them, and so you should be. So thank you so much for having me here to Rockford. I have come to you from Canada. I live in Vancouver, Canada. I don't know if any of you have been there. Yeah? Good. And I was the music director of a lovely orchestra called the Victoria Symphony Orchestra. It's off of Vancouver is Vancouver Island, and the capital of British Columbia is Victoria, and that's where I was. I was the music director there for 14 years. Since that time, I've been guest conducting and looking for my next home. So here I am, very happy to meet with you, and I thought, in the concert, I like to also talk to the audience and give the audience some ideas about the music. Most especially, I love to talk about how to listen to music, or how when we listen to something, it impacts how we experience the music itself. So I love to draw your attention, your awareness to what's going on inside of the music. And I thought today I would start off a little bit with the Mozart Symphony, because tonight during the concert, I won't speak about the Mozart Symphony. I'll let the music speak for itself. But here I have you, and I have the opportunity to share a few things with you. One thing that I find so amazing about Mozart's Haffner Symphony is that he was a very busy man at this time. He was in the middle of finishing off an opera. He was trying to write out all the parts, and then he gets a message from his dad, a letter from his dad. "Dear son, I need you to write some music for our dear friends, the Haffners. Their son is going to get a noble title, and we need a new symphony." And Mozart writes back, "Dear Dad, I am so busy. There is no way I could do this. Only for you will I do this, but I can only write this symphony in one night." So he wrote the Haffner Symphony in one night, mailed it off to his father. Months went by, the event apparently happened well, and the parts came back to him. And when he got the parts back, Mozart was actually quite astonished at how good his little, at the time it was more like a serenade than it was a symphony. It had 2 minuets or 2 little dances inside. And so he thought, wow, this is actually a very good symphony. So he added some woodwinds, some flute parts, some oboe parts, and he changed a little bit about the symphony to make the work that we hear today. One thing that stands out to me when I listen to this symphony is the theme of the first movement. And it's very unusual because this theme that I'm going to play for you is all the way from beginning to end in the first movement. Usually, symphonies have one theme, and then we usually can hear at least a second theme. It's often contrasting, sometimes even 3. But listen to this theme and tell me how complex you think it is. Now, do we have the music ready to go? Can I press play? I hope so. Now, I don't know about you, but I even feel I could write that theme. It's just really 4 steps going down, isn't it? And you think, well, that's not very interesting. How could Mozart create something on those basically 4 notes? Well, let's listen a little bit further. So he takes that theme and he adds a little rhythm to it. Bum bum ba dum bum bee dum. Bum bum ba dum bum bee dum. Okay, so now we have two things to listen for. That theme that is stepwise. And we have the rhythm. So now let's hear it. Now, from this point forward, you're going to find that theme, the very first theme that I played for you, it's going to be hiding in the music. You're going to hear it played by the violas over here. Sometimes you'll hear it hidden in the violins. Sometimes you hear it in the brass. And as you listen to this concert tonight in this first movement, you could literally probably pick out 20 or 25 times where this theme is hiding inside. Listen very carefully and see if you can pick it out. And here it's in a soft section, but it's still hidden inside. Now, this is the last part of the theme that I will pick out for you. But so far, the rhythm has been da-dee-da-dum-bum. So two beats for each of the notes. And now, even though we've heard this theme so many times in many different moods, he creates kind of different sounds and different moods, different clothing for the theme, even though the theme stays the same. Now he takes that theme and he doubles the speed so it's twice as fast. Okay, well, my technology here is a little bit rough around the edges, but I hope that you got a sense for how unique it was for someone to be able to compose using a very, very simple theme and yet to create something so beautiful. What Mozart really does is he takes something that repeats itself, but by adding ornamentation, by adding different colors, by adding different chords, by different moods, he takes us on a journey through that whole first movement. And I think it's really something very special. Mozart wrote this symphony. It's only 15 minutes long. It has four movements, and it's very it's a very special sound that Mozart brings to all of his symphonic works. The late ones tend to have in the second movement something very lovely, a little bit slower. In the third movement, a minuet, which is, of course, a lovely dance, but in Mozart's hands, sometimes it goes back and forth between sort of a peasant dance, something a little bit more fun, and something very elegant, and you'll hear that in the third movement. And in the last movement, he tells his dad, he writes in the letter to his dad, please tell the musicians to play it as fast as possible. So the musicians here at the Rockford Symphony are going to be playing it as fast as possible tonight. We'll see what you think about their virtuosic playing. So there's a little bit of an introduction to Mozart, and I'm going to skip to Copland's Appalachian Spring. This is a very special piece of music, one that I think so captures the feeling that we all desire right now, a desire for a new spring-like hope for the future, a sense of something new coming out of two long years inside of a pandemic, a feeling of wanting to build and create and to start over. These are the feelings that we get from spring, and most especially this is the feeling that we have right now in our world. But also, you feel this hope so strongly in this piece of music written by Copeland. And Copeland's Appalachian Spring was commissioned by the dancer, choreographer, Martha Graham. And when she commissioned the piece, she just had a very vague idea of what it was that she wanted the piece to be about. She wanted it to be about the American spirit. But she didn't really have a story in mind. She didn't have a very concrete way of describing to Copeland exactly what her image was for the piece. Eventually, the piece came to have a young lady, a young man, newlyweds, who were pioneers in Pennsylvania, a preacher, an old lady, a congregation. All of these characters become a part of the story. But sometimes in the creative process, these things sort of emerge over time. When Copeland first got the commission from Martha, he didn't hear from her for a very, very long time. It just sort of became empty space. And he had some creative time on his hands, so he started composing in the spirit of this piece. It turns out that if you listen carefully, about two-thirds of the way in the score, you hear what sounds like a train. And if you hear a train, you're correct. There is a train written into this music, even though there is no train whatsoever in Martha Graham's final story. But I always find it really, really charming to think about the sense of how we have a symbol, and how we use symbols in when we create things or when we think about things. And so for Copeland, a train was part of that American spirit that he was trying to grab onto. And you hear the sound of the train starting up with repeated notes in the viola section right here. And when that starts, you can feel that the train itself is starting to move. In fact, there's even one part over here in the first violins, and I'll point it out to you hopefully in the concert, where you hear this squealing harmonic sound, the sound of the squealing wheels of the brakes of the train. This sense of newfound spirit, of all the potential of what the American dream would be. It was a universal ideal that really was captured in this piece. And ultimately, the spirit that we feel with the piece, even as it finally became about newlyweds, still captures all of us in our own way. There is a beautiful work in this movement as well, in this piece of music as well, called A Gift to Be Simple, or Simple Gifts. And so after the train happens, you'll hear this beautiful music coming from a solo clarinet, and the beautiful words will come to you. It's a gift to be simple. The piece was called Appalachian Spring, but not until, just like the rest of the story I'm telling you, not until the very last minute. For the longest time, Copeland just called it Ballet for Martha. And literally, days before it was premiered in 1944, so I think about how that might have been impacted by the feeling, the spirit in America at the time with the war. So we're almost at premiere time. Obviously, the dancers have been working on the piece. It's still called Ballet for Martha. And then Martha Graham sees a poem by Hart Crane, and it's called The Dance. And the first words are, "Oh, Appalachian Spring." And she says, "That's the name of my piece." And we all hear Appalachian Spring, and what do we think of? Probably the Appalachian Mountains and the season of spring. But in the poem, it's actually about a spring of water. So you'll know that it has, like many things in this work, many universal meanings and many universal spirits of spring and happiness and joy and renewal. So those are two of the works that are on the program tonight. I'm so delighted to tell you more about the rest of the program when I am on the stage conducting the orchestra. And with the few minutes that I had left, I thought I would spend a few moments telling you a little bit about what it is like to be a conductor, or maybe even more importantly, what is it that we are really doing up here? Because some people really wonder that. They think, especially the musicians, if I ask them what we're doing up here, many of them would have a lot of opinions about that, and it would be probably terrifying for me to find out what all of their opinions are. But the truth of the matter is, we are it's a very special place to be up here on the podium, because many people think that we're here to start the music and to finish the music, but quite frankly, we are the gatherers of the energy of the musicians. If you imagine that how spread apart all of these musicians are on the stage, and how it would be so easy for them not to be able to play together, or with the same sort of commitment to the kind of same journey, the same energy. What a conductor does, in a sense, is acts as a conduit for all of that energy, a focal point, a focus. I'm always amazed that when I put my hand down and I touch this one magical spot in the invisible air, that everybody knows exactly when to play at that exact time. And it's amazing how there's a mystery in the music. There's a mystery in the sound of music and how we all use our ears and how we all listen and how it all comes together. And one thing I want to share with you is about this feeling of the energy as a conductor. Sometimes we feel that we have to change the direction of where something is going to go. So sometimes the music is going to change in a tempo or in a feeling or in a mood. And by the way we create our gestures, by the way we change even our faces sometimes, certainly by what we show with our hands, we can change the feeling of where the music is going to go. We can actually change the course. Sometimes I feel like music, because I'm talking about energy, is like a flow of water. And sometimes I put my hands into that water and I move it around, or like it's a malleable clay and I can change what it's doing, where it's going, how it's going to sound. But there are many beautiful moments on a stage, especially with a great orchestra like the Rockford Symphony, where this flow of water starts to go. The musicians start to flow together. They listen to each other. The awareness that they have for each other opens up and changes, and everybody goes into a feeling of the same tempo, perhaps, or the same energy. And sometimes, instead of putting my hand in that water, you know what I do? Is I take it right out, and I let it flow without me. And that can be the best thing sometimes that a conductor can do, is to listen to the music and to know when to put your hand inside and change something and when to let the music play. And you'll see that happen tonight. There's many, many moments of interaction between a conductor and between an orchestra. Moments where we listen to each other, moments where we let the sharing be between musicians rather than between the conductor and the orchestra. And of course, many, many times where the conductor gives either confidence or a sense of awareness of where we're going. When I say confidence, one of the jobs that a conductor has is to cue. And you would think that that might be not so difficult or not so treacherous for the musicians to know where to come in. But sometimes on their parts, they can have measures and measures with nothing in their parts. For instance, Carrie Knodel just asked me in this past rehearsal, he said, you know, we have about 120 measures before we play this part. Can you make sure that you cue us for this part? So there is a wonderful aspect of being a conductor, which is like I'm the host. I'm sort of here. Please come in. Please join us. Please play trumpets. Really, no, trumpets louder, softer. You know, all these little moments where we're a part of sharing something, communicating something, working together, and listening to each other. And the other thing that I think is fascinating about being a conductor, I feel so fortunate, is that when I spend my hour after hour after hour, which I do, studying the score, I'm amazed that every time I study a score, new things are revealed to me. It's incredible how our brain knows that it can't take in everything. So it prioritizes certain things, sometimes against your awareness or against your will. And it only lets in certain information and excludes other things. But when you spend time with something and you really become aware, the next thing you know, certain things reveal themselves. Certain aspects, relationships or connections in the score that I'd never seen before, all of a sudden, they expose themselves to me and I see them. And I find every time that happens to me as a conductor, I've just become deeper and deeper and closer with the conductor, with the composer, with the score, with the experience of the music. And what I've really noticed, and this is amazing, I find, is that whatever I'm aware of, I can make the orchestra aware of. In a certain way, when a conductor listens to a chord and concentrates on that chord, all of a sudden, the awareness of the entire orchestra also focuses on that chord. If I focus on rhythm, in that moment, the orchestra focuses on the rhythm too. There's this sort of unspoken, wordless strength of energy and understanding that kind of moves between a conductor and an orchestra. And so many people will often say, but they're not looking at you. But there's so many times when we feel each other, that sense of feeling what each other is doing, where we see part of what they're doing, using our ears for other parts, and in general kind of share the space of communication, share the feeling of making the music. And that's where you come in. Often I have to really remind audiences how much they are a part of the experience. We feel the warmth that comes from an audience. We feel the attentiveness that comes from an audience. We feel the joyfulness that comes from an audience. We always respond to each night in a live performance in a unique way. And I know that it comes from the group that comes together in that night. I know that it comes from that particular evening where the exact group of people come together as community and share that moment. So I'm always aware of the audience and how much they impact the music that we have. So I wanted to just tell you it's an absolute pleasure to be here. It's a joy to be working with your symphony. I was privileged to be able to see much of Rockford in the last week. It's a beautiful community, so much history here, so many beautiful places to be. And so I'm glad to meet you, I'm glad to spend time with you, and I hope that you enjoy spending time with each other in the shared experience of being with this beautiful music. So thank you very much.